Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com. It is the 15th of October 2013 and this is episode 167 of the podcast. Now, today I have an interview with Tom Evans, author of The Zone, How to Get in It and Stay in It. And we have a really good chat about all the various states necessary for an author these days. Plus, I have a really soft spot for Tom because he helped unblock my own issues around writing fiction. And I looked it up and it was back in episode number 16 of the podcast in June 2009. Can you believe it? You can actually listen to that episode. I hesitate to do it myself because obviously I've got better at podcasting. And I think back then I was still using the phone. But anyway, back in episode 16, June 2009, and you can find the backlist at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. All the backlists are not on iTunes because my feed had some issues. So, but you can always download the backlist stuff. So, yeah, that is coming up soon. Some news in the meantime. One, it is pretty chilly in England. I think we have this kind of blast of, and this is very English talking about the weather, but I'm kind of huddled here and I've just ordered some slippers and, you know, the weather suddenly changed. Now, I really like that because I love the rain, and in the summer I listen to rain while I write. You know, that's the, in quotes, music I listen to is rain on repeat and storms, which is, I guess, very English, perhaps. But I do like the winter. After years in Australia, I particularly like the winter. So quite excited about that. And Brits start going down the pub more. So that's quite fun too. So it's a bit of a social season, bit of a conference season. I seem to be speaking every weekend between now and Christmas, which is kind of crazy. So yeah, busy time. I've also been in Berlin, talking of speaking and fun. I was in Berlin last weekend. It was really, well, the weekend before now as I talk. I was at a conference run by ePubli, E-P-U-B-L-I, ePubli.com or .co.uk. ePubli's like a distributor, you know, similar to Smashwords, BookBaby, that type of thing, but they've grown out of Germany, and they focus on the German market, but also on other markets too. So they were running a conference about rewriting the web, and it was about learning how we can all learn from different industries, so gaming, app development, as well as traditional publishing. And I spoke about the entrepreneurial author and all the different rights we can exploit. So that was really exciting. And I spoke after a guy from Google, which was sort of, wow. I did ask him about Google Play and, you know, whether we could get a decent back end on Google Play. But that is still one of those sites that's going to be hard, I think, for a while. But I was it was really exciting to meet a whole load of people who are so positive about what's going on in Germany. I really think it will be the next country to boom in terms of ebook sales, and that was certainly the mood at Frankfurt Book Fair as well. They had sessions on publishing and things, so yeah, really excited about Germany, so much so that the next show, I'll be interviewing Matthias Matting, who runs the top site for self-publishing in Germany, and he's going to have a book available, an ebook available on how to publish in Germany, because we know, I think pretty much we know what we're doing in America, but I mean America and the UK, Canada, you know, we pretty much know what we're doing in some of these mostly English-speaking markets. But we, you know, and it feels like Amazon has won the game and all that type of thing. But in other markets, things are quite different. So I think you'll be surprised that in Germany, there's a whole load of things you've never heard of. people are buying their books through different things. And then, for example, in India, the biggest ebook site is Flipkart, now, which, by the way, Smashwords distributes to Flipkart, which is another reason to be with Smashwords. But essentially, and I'll be talking to another author in India before Christmas, so I'm really trying to get you guys the information, and me, of course, entirely selfishly. I want to know how we can maximize our sales in these markets. So, yeah, I want us all to sort of lift our eyes to the horizon and think about the audience in other markets, in other places in the world. With the proliferation of smartphones, you know, ebook reading is only going to become more and more prevalent. So we're still in the very baby years of this new world of, I don't know, author, entrepreneur, whatever you want to call it. I think the language is still difficult, but the opportunities are amazing. So yeah, very excited about everything that's going on. And obviously our focus should be creating more books to turn into more product and more rights in different languages and all that. So on my writing, it's becoming more and more likely that I'll have Desecration out by Christmas, or at least in January. So I hope to talk more about that next time. You can get on my list for notification at jfpenn.com/list if you're interested in hearing about that. And there'll be competitions and exciting stuff, giveaways, etc. I will be starting the sequel to that during NaNoWriMo, so hopefully have first draft done at the end of November. I've already got quite a lot of ideas and about 10,000 words done, so I don't think that's cheating, NaNoWriMo. And I've never won NaNoWriMo. I've always, you know, I've tried it several times and just managed, you know, written a goodly amount, but I've never managed to do the full draft, so we'll see. But anyway, I am doing NaNoWriMo, and you can be my buddy if you want. I think I'm Joanna Penn on NaNoWriMo. Yes, so that's happening. And then after I've written that second one in that series, I will be writing Arcane number 4. And actually, amusingly, I have on my wall a list of all the books that are in my queue to be created. And I'm trying not to add anything more to the queue, because basically the queue will take me through until the end of next year at least. I'm also writing a book, another non-fiction book on public speaking for authors, creatives, and that will be a short book, non-fiction, obviously, that will be out prior to Christmas, because I get asked all the time about speaking, as I do so much of it, and I am an introvert, and I think it's a critical skill for authors wanting to stand out. So I will be talking about that soon, I guess. Other news, One Day in Budapest, it will be out in print in the next week or so. I've just got I have the proof copy here. It's so cute. It's a really cute little book because it's a novella. But I decided, because I want to do giveaways, and it makes a nice little present. I am doing a giveaway on Goodreads, and that will be up until November the 14th. So if you want to get one of those 5 giveaway copies, you can go to Goodreads Giveaways, search for Budapest, or I'll put a link in the show notes. So that's giveaway of signed print One Day in Budapest, my slightly political thriller. I have another giveaway. Aren't I good to you guys? Well, actually, it's Audible. So the first 3 in the Arcane series are now available on Audible and iTunes. And I have 5 promo codes for Exodus, the 3rd in the Arcane series, although it's definitely standalone, so you don't have to have listened or read the other books. So the aim is to get reviews. So if you think you can listen and leave a review on Audible, then please email me for a promo code. It will be first come, first served. So just email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com. So that's for a promo code for Exodus. And I guess on the subject of reviews, I'd like to thank listener Robert Williger for the 5-star review on iTunes for the podcast. I really appreciate it, and I'm very remiss in not mentioning reviews very much. So it would really help get this show out to more people if we get some reviews on iTunes or whatever podcatcher you get this feed from. If you like the show, I would love a review. Okay, right, let's get on with things. So the podcast is now sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, which on the global side has the upper hand in Canada, New Zealand and Australia, at least for my own book sales. And they actively work in markets that Amazon hasn't really focused on yet. They also partner with companies in various countries. And I love Amazon. You guys know I love Amazon. But I do think a healthy, competitive ecosystem is better for everyone. And so I love Kobo as well. It is obviously a smaller percentage in the big markets right now. But we have to look at, as I said, keep your eyes on the horizon. Who knows what's going to happen? Just while we're on that, I'm still pimping Kobo, of course, but I'll also be focusing more on the iBookstore based on a marvellous talk by Mark Coker, which I've linked to in the show notes as well, which is all about how to, you know, make the most of the iBookstore, because I think some of these other platforms, you know, we don't focus on so much, but we need to. Okay, so in the spirit of the international flavour of my introduction, here's a word from Camille from Kobo Europe, and you're going to love her accent.
Hi, Creative Pen fans. This is Camille Mofidi from Paris. I'm the European manager for Kobo Writing Life. I am myself a big fan of Joanna's books. Actually, I love the short stories she wrote for The Descent, Kobo's Infernal Contest. And I am also very fond of the useful tips and advices that Joanna shares on her blog, her podcast, and her newsletter. I am very excited about working with authors in Europe in order to give them more visibility. And that's the reason why Kobo Writing Life is already available in 6 languages: English, French, Spanish, Italian, German, and Dutch. Plus, we have great partnerships with big retailers all over Europe, like Fnac in France, or Mondadori in Italy. So stay tuned on KoboWritingLife.com to discover all the amazing material we're preparing for our authors. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter, of course. Thanks for listening, and now back to your host, Joanna.
Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from the creativepen.com, and today I'm here with Tom Evans. Hi Tom.
Hi Joanna, how are you doing?
I'm good. So just as an introduction, Tom is an author, an inspirational speaker and creative catalyst. His latest book is The Zone, How to Get in It and Stay in It, which, you know, let's face it, we all want. And Tom has actually been on the podcast before talking about unblocking writer's block. So I'm really happy to have you back on the show, Tom.
Oh, it's great to be here. It seems like a long time though, isn't it?
I think it has been quite a long time, although obviously we've chatted in between.
For sure.
But you've done so much since you last came on the show. I wonder if you would start, I mean, but this new book, The Zone, is brilliant, and we're going to get into a lot of depth. But just start by kind of giving us an overview of The Zone in general. The phrase is used a lot, but what do you mean by The Zone?
Well, that's interesting, because I think everyone thinks of The Zone as this space where you get into this magical place where things just fly by. And I just started this year with the idea that I've never written what I'd call a self-help book. My books have always been quite practical, almost like workbooks that might go along with a workshop. You know, so I wrote a book, How You Unblock Yourself, and it's got loads of exercises in it. I wrote a book about how you have light bulb moments, and it's got exercises. But I've never written a generic self-help book. So I asked a friend of mine about this, and she said, well, you're really good at getting people in the zone, why do you write about that? So that might sound a simple thing to say, but then when I started looking into it, I realized there's not just one zone. You know, you can put nearly any English word with the word zone, and you can come up with the aardvark zone or the banana zone or, you know, any zone, you know, the children's zone or the public zone or the parking zone. So I love mind maps, as you know. I started mind mapping all the zones we can get in. So we, of course, we've got the creative zone, we've got the performance zone, we've got the entrepreneurial zone. But I also realised that we can fall off the rails, and we can go into addiction zones and guilt zones and fear zones and this sort of stuff. So it's really a book about all the places we end up in, but it's a journey. So it starts with a doing zone, moves into zones where things might not go so well, and then ends up in zones where life just happens magically. So it's a bit of a, it's a kind of travelogue through the zones, I guess.
Yeah, and I think maybe the word state would be interchangeable, would it?
Yeah, I only use the word zone because it's in our vernacular. We know we use the word, hey, we're in the zone, and I was in the zone when that happened.
No, absolutely. So obviously the creative zone is one of the ones, and in the book, you know, that you have different chapters on different zones and things. So we're just going to pick a few of them. So the creative zone is obviously the one that my listeners are really interested in. So tell us a bit more about the creative zone and how people can get into that state.
Well, I think this, it's important to say there's a difference between the creative zone and the busy zone. So if you're just busy, right, and you don't have a sense of creating for a purpose, and you don't have a sense of creating with completion in mind, all you end up doing is being in the busy zone. So the creative zone is where you've got a plan and you've got a plot, and you've been perfecting your art as well. It's all about honing your skills. And so that, let's say every book you write, you get better and better at writing that book, or you try different things. So this is me trying to write a self-help book as opposed to writing like a book which is more like a workshop manual, or a book which is explaining some esoteric glyph or something like that, which is the other thing I write about. So the creative zone is about us creating something. So there's going to be some output from the process, as opposed to the busy zone, which is just where we're just doing stuff. That makes sense. So it's got to be about crafting something.
Yeah. And do you have, do you recommend sort of techniques for getting into that creative zone?
Yeah, I do. So for me, I kind of, because I started life as an engineer, when I got into this sort of creative space, I used that engineering mindset to unpack what we do when we're creative and what we do when we're not creative. That's where the book about blocks came from. I started first looking at what stopped people, and then I found out what actually got people to be creative. And it's about getting the left and right brains working together on the same task. And our left brain, it's kind of an urban myth, which is false, that the left brain is logical and the right brain is creative. Neuroscientists know now that the left brain does creative things and the right brain does logical things. It's more, a better analogy is that the left brain focuses on the detail and the right brain keeps the big picture. So if you're working on a creative piece, some bit of your consciousness, whether it be left brain or right brain or front brain or back brain, should be looking at the whole, so you know where you are in the whole and making sure that the detail you're working on is actually fitting in with the whole and you're not wandering down some cul-de-sac or off at a tangent. So left brain, right brain. Then you're like, now put an e-course to go with the book. There's got loads of little techniques in it, how you can get left and right brain there working together.
But you're a fan of things like meditation, aren't you? And kind of those, I guess, techniques that will help still the mind as well.
Yeah, and that comes into that's where we kind of take a step into the time zone. So when you're in the what I call the eyes open meditative state, you can actually get about 4 hours work done in an hour. And so so when a meditation is not about sort of sitting in a dark cave with your legs crossed chanting Om, it's about letting the internal mind that's chattering away, maybe saying, oh, don't be so silly, Joanne, what are you doing writing a book? Go and get a day job. And when that's happening, our inner chatter is active. And maybe some fears are coming up as well of, you know, don't write that book because you're never going to get published now. As we know, of course, nowadays it's simple to get published. So so basically the time zone is when we get into this meditative state, eyes open, and really let the inner chatter go quiescent, so our full creative flow can be brought to bear.
And we're going to come back to the time thing. But it's interesting, I think, as well, that for me to remember that a zone or get or the muse arriving is not the only thing that's the point when we write. I don't believe, I'm sure you don't believe either, that it's kind of magical that everything we write. We do also have to put in the time to actually do the work, and you know that these things will happen. So is the creative zone, well, you use the word completion, don't you? Completion is the actual finishing the work,
or finishing that phase of the work. So you might get into, you know, you're creative while you're doing the first draft of a book, and then a different set of skills will be used to edit it and then to be used to produce it into a book. So you might take you will be the creator of the first bit of the book because you know the words you want to put in and the storyline and the plot and that sort of stuff. And then an editor or proofreader might be creative about how they hone the book so it's got nicer, more rounded edges. And then a book designer might then format it beautifully inside and do the best cover. And they're being creative as well. And then we get creative marketeers that then take it out to the to the market. Now, often for self-published authors, quite often you have to do so much of that yourself. But obviously there's several people out there that we know and love that do some fantastic jobs down that whole process. So the creative zone, you know, creators often have to spin many, many plates. Mm. And but the one thing they must all do, they must all complete, they must have a sense of completion. So we must know that now it's ready to go from first draft to second draft, and from second draft to proofreading, from proofreading to design, and now I'm in launch mode. And so it's important to know where you are. And of course, most creators will have several projects on the go at the one time. So when one project is kind of tailing off and going into marketing mode, the bubbling up of the next project will be coming in. And one thing I find very useful to say to authors that I work with is that, you know, have a plan for the book. So you've got a structure for the book. And I use mind maps a lot, you know, because they get the left and right brain working together. So once that mind map has been delivered, if another chapter pops in, say, okay, I love that chapter, but that's going to be in book two and book three and that sort of stuff. And nowadays it's easy when you've written book two and book three to then do combined editions and that sort of thing. Mm. But if you keep waiting to do another bit of creation and another bit of creation before you actually publish, then you slide into that just busyness zone where actually you're not getting anywhere, you're not completing.
Mm, I agree with you. And to me, creativity is more than imagination in that you actually end up with a finished product. Yes. Whereas imagination is just thinking about lots of different ideas, I guess, and creativity is actually producing. But you've mentioned there one reason why people don't finish is that they keep finding more and more stuff. But that is one of the biggest questions I get from people is, I can't finish a book. How do I finish? You know, how do I actually finish? Do you have any tips for people stuck in that bit of the zone?
Yeah, what's happened is without them knowing it, they've actually slid into the fear zone. So procrastination is actually a fear in operation. So what we do is we become creative about not getting to the completion point. So we come up with loads of inventive ideas of, oh yeah, but I'm just waiting for this to come back from a reviewer, I'm waiting for the perfect cover to turn up, or as you say, I'll just write another chapter. And I is masking a fear in operation. So what I do is I get to the source fear, which could be go right back to childhood. Maybe someone had a bad essay marked at school, or they stood up and did something in a choir and made a fool of themselves and this sort of stuff. So it might be a fear of ridicule, or a fear of the unknown, or a fear of failing. And as you know, the best way not to fail is not to try in the first place. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So I'd say that when you see that sort of pattern going where someone doesn't finish something, then that's a symptom, but the cause is a fear.
Yeah, absolutely. And understanding that can actually help people get to the root of it. And just reflecting back on, you know, when you helped me back years ago now when we talked about blocks. And,
oh, yeah.
And I had said, oh, I can't write fiction. You know, that was what I said. I can't write fiction. If people want to listen to that episode, it was like number 50 or something years ago. And I can't remember what you said, but it was basically something around the fear of failure and fear of being embarrassed. And, you know, and for me, it was fear of not living up to some literary, you know, sort of pedestal that I could never aspire, you know, get to, Pulitzer Prize winning novel, whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that understanding that helps people. So, yeah, that's
how many books have you sold now?
Oh, quite a lot. I'm coming up to like 75,000 or something.
This is a woman that can't write fiction.
I know. Now I have a list on my wall of like 9 different fiction projects that for my next year. So yes, I mean, once you identify that, you can really break through. And just kind of moving further than that, on the finishing and the, you know, I'm always encouraging authors to think of themselves as entrepreneurs, which I say is creating something of value out of nothing, out of your imagination. And you talk about the entrepreneurial zone. So I wondered if you would expand on what you mean by that.
Well, actually, I love language, as you know, and I love looking back at the etymology of words. And if you actually look at the etymology of the word entrepreneur, it comes from the French, most recent the French, but there's even Sanskrit roots. But the French root is entre and prendre, which is to undertake something. Mm. So basically, an entrepreneur is someone that undertakes, not an undertaker, that's something different, but someone that undertakes to do something.
Yeah.
And the best entrepreneurs are the ones that undertake something that hasn't been done before.
Mm.
And I know the word entrepreneur has come up.
Yes.
This sort of stuff. But to me, the entrepreneur has got a skill which they might not even be aware of. I mentioned about the left and right brains.
Mm.
Being the same, but we've also got now, neuroscientists know this, we've got nerve centers all over our body. We've got nerve centers in our gut. We've got more neurons in our gut than a cat has got in its brain. And our gut is always right. You know, the time, how many times have you said, I wish I'd gone with my gut on that? How many times have you said, oh, my heart's not in it? So the real skill of an entrepreneur to me, apart from their output, you know, that their inventiveness and this sort of stuff and their marketing ideas and getting a product or a service to market, is they are people that have got their head, heart, and gut in alignment.
Mm.
I actually call them entrepreneurs. And the gut mind, this has been now proven by scientists with MRI scanners, the gut mind works 5 seconds ahead of our conscious brain.
Mm.
So an entrepreneur to me is someone that's ahead of everyone else continually by 5 seconds or more.
Well, that's cool, which is difficult when writing a book takes a bit longer than 5 seconds. But if you have an idea...
You can tune into the words you haven't written yet. Using these mindfulness techniques, these meditative techniques, you can tune into what we call prescience or future memories. So you can get the words sent from the future to the present. And that works a treat.
I'm going to point people at your book for that, because that's all getting a bit deep and meaningful, but it's I find it really interesting, and I don't think, I'm sure people are listening going, well, I'm not an entrepreneur, that's not me, but I think we can learn these skills, right? This is not something, I don't think I was born entrepreneurial. I think this is something I fostered over time and learnt about.
Yeah, I think everyone can learn the tips and tricks of an entrepreneur. And we've got to bear in mind that when we've got a product or a service, there are many people that bring it to market. So there will be people that are great at coming up with a seed idea. There'll be people that are really good at finishing it. Let's say it's a book, that person that will design the book and finish it. There'll be great people that can take it to market. And I think the main thing we have to do as undertakers, as entrepreneurs, is to find the sweet spot and the thing that we like. And if you work in a business where, let's say you got, 4 or 5 people in the business or 400 or 500 people, it's getting everyone to work to their strength. And then importantly, knowing the strengths of the other people around them. So and so the whole team is working together and undertaking whatever it is to get together.
But given that most authors work on their own, you know, you have to, I think you have to have the entrepreneurial spark in order to actually get a book out there. You know, even if it's maybe it's a resilience, because even if people want to get an agent and, you know, rather than self-publish like I do, like we do, you have to have that kind of resilience. Do you think that goes in, or is that in another zone?
No, I think entrepreneurs are brilliant at is failing gracefully.
Yes.
And so when they fail, they go, okay, that was interesting. Mm. Now, as Edison said, I know all these things that don't make a good light bulb filament.
Yes.
And, you know, why do you try 10,000 materials? Well, I've got 999,000 things that aren't very good for light bulbs. But you know what? I found some things that are good for other things that I wasn't expecting.
Mm.
And so, you know, each book of mine that I do, I try different styles of writing out, you know, right from poetry through to prose through to philosophy, so I could become a better writer. And each book, you know, increments from the other ones. So I think part of it is being prepared to fail, but also learning from failure. And then you actually turn any failure into a success.
Yeah, and exactly. And you know, looking at your books, I mean, you've got The 100 Years of Ermyntrude, which is a, you know, like a small poetry book, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's never going to be a New York Times bestseller, you know, obviously. It's just that just doesn't happen with poetry. And it's kind of like each project doesn't have to be the same definition. And I feel the same way about my books. It's like each book is its own thing, and each book is like its own company or you know, creative thing that goes in the world, and then it has its own life.
That was an interesting book. So it was the first book, a proper book that I wrote and published. And it taught me about the publishing industry.
Mm.
It allowed me to go to networking events and say, hi, I'm not a board or boring IT consultant, I'm an author.
Yes.
It opened doors for me. The money I made from it, incidentally, I gave to a breast cancer charity, and I ended up walking around London in a bra for 26 miles as a result of writing it. And that book was solely responsible for converting me into an author's mentor and writer's unblocker. So yes. Indirectly, even though the book might not be a bestseller and make any money, I gave the money away, as I mentioned, is I've actually earned quite a lot of money as a result of writing that book, and it's opened some amazing doors for me, including speaking to you all those podcasts ago.
Yeah, and I'm the same. Like, my first book, How to Enjoy Your Job, which isn't even for sale anymore, you know, I've withdrawn it, rewritten it, reissued it, it's career change. Same deal. That book, I had to send a whole load of books to the, you know, pulping machine because I couldn't sell them. and it would be considered a failure in terms of financial success and fame and whatever. But that book, same as you, turned my life around and taught me everything I knew and started my blog and has ended up being the catalyst for where I am now. So I'm totally with you, and I think that's really important. It's about not measuring the word success the same every time, and also having a kind of bigger picture view. Like, we just don't know how things are going to end up, do we?
For sure, yeah. And I've probably given more books away as business cards than I've ever sold, but it's ended up with more business coming my way of a nature that I want to undertake, as opposed to 10 years ago when I was actually bored doing this. I was being well paid but bored, essentially, and wondering what else there was in life, you know. So the entrepreneurship there is to undertake a different way of being, a different way of life.
Yeah, and to take a chance on something that you want to create, even if it's not necessarily going to sell well or market well, just trust, and maybe it's trusting the gut thing.
And that book taught me a lot about the production process. It taught me a lot about the creative process. And as an engineer, the state I was in when that book arrived was absolutely fascinating. I'd never experienced it before. I just started meditating. I'd never known how to make my mind go quiet, but this lovely lady taught me how to do it. And it was in the meditative state on a 747 crossing the Atlantic when that book just popped into my brain. The whole vision popped in. And it didn't take long to write. And it was only after that that I went, okay, well, how did that happen? And how could I teach other people to pull off the same feats?
Well, it's interesting you say that totally off the topic. But, you know, on the meditation thing, going back to when you learnt that, you said you didn't know how to do that and somebody taught you that. People get confused about meditation and about this kind of state. And I've tried to just start sitting, and you know, you do think, that's the thing, isn't it? You do actually have thoughts when you meditate, and that's, you know, it's not about thoughtlessness as such.
Yeah, and they're gifts as well. And we're all natural meditators. Have you ever driven from A to B and not remembered how you got actually got there? But you know, you weren't drunk, and you sort of drove in that sort of state. You were in a natural meditative state, and if you go out for a walk, it's a great way to get into that state. I've got the two best writer's friends I have are my two dogs. So if I hit writer's block, it's out for a walk, and by golly, does the right inspiration just pop in.
Yeah.
And it's more perfect than you're going to get than sitting at a computer trying to bash things out, you know what I mean?
So it's more of an active meditation, really.
Yeah, and I go out with the intent. I don't think about the thing I'm stuck on. I just go out with the intent that whatever will come in will be the unsticker. And you can meditate with that as well. You can even order dreams up. So I've dreamt up several chapters where I go to bed the night before and put on the post-it note something I want some insight on, put it under the pillow, and you have a dream about that and you get some insight on it.
You just give your brain some space when you're not forcing anything, I guess.
That's it, yeah. And it's so effortless. So what comes out, you know, what comes out is your first draft is like many other people's second or third drafts. It's almost perfectly formed.
Well, I hope I get to that point. I'm really sort of, let's get back to the time thing, because another one of the big questions I get is, how do people balance the time between the writing and then all the marketing stuff and all that kind of businessy stuff that authors have to do, regardless of how they're published? So you obviously have the time zone, and you talked briefly about that, but you also have a course on bending time.
I do.
So without getting too physicist, metaphysical, can you explain a bit more about that?
Yeah, well, I'll give you the 30-second version of how it works. First is, different parts of our body experience time in different ways. Our left brain kind of keeps the clock of time. Our right brain sits everywhere and everyone else. Our gut mind's slightly ahead of time. And so if you bring all these consciousness elements together, you could end up in this kind of timeless state where time seems to take on a different quality. So if you stop thinking, what actually creates the illusion of time is our internal dialogue. So if you make your mind go quiescent, then time stretches. But the important thing to do with writing is to know what your natural propensity is to do with the cycles. So I noticed after writing 6 books, I'd written them all in spring. So now I don't even try and write anything in autumn, and that's when I do my marketing, my harvesting. So I get back in tune with the natural cycles. I even pay attention to the moon cycles. So I work monthly, not monthly. And I write in spring and market in autumn and winter, and maybe start to the seeds to nurture in winter for the next book I'm going to go and do in spring. And then the most important thing is I know I'm most creative between 8 o'clock and 11 o'clock in the day. So what I do is I make appointments with my chapters. So let's say I've got a 12-chapter book. I might write 2 chapters a week, and I know I'll get to first draft in 6 weeks that way. And I make appointments with my chapters between 5 and 11. And most of my clients know that I'm not around before 11 o'clock. And if a client call comes in, say, can you see me on Thursday between 8 and 11? And I've already booked my chapter in, I give my chapter priority over the client. Now that might sound, I don't know, obsessive or something, but it's the only way you get things done. What happens over time is clients ring you up and they say, are you free next Wednesday? You say, well, funny enough, I am free because on Tuesday and Thursday I'm busy, but I have got a slot then. So as long as things get in really in synchronism, once you get in tune with the natural cycles, everything really flows and you stop pushing water uphill.
And that's part of the reason I like you, because you have this, you know, moon cycles and, you know, bending time. And then you are very, very structured with your work. It's not like it's all just woo-woo. You actually are very structured and you're still that kind of engineering type. So I think we all need both of those things. You know, things just don't manifest. A book doesn't manifest without the work, right?
Yeah, and also tomorrow's physics is yesterday's metaphysics. So what we think might be a bit woo-woo la-la today is actually what we then, the science understands, and then becomes our science and technology. If you think about just what we're doing right now, this is magic at the quantum layer. I started life out as a BBC engineer, so I learned all about how you create from an image into electrons, and then the electrons go down a wire and pop out the other end and then make another image. So I know all the technology behind that. And quite frankly, 200 years ago, if you explain that to somebody, they think it's magic. And in 200 years from now, we'll be doing things which seem like magic, but because we'll understand them, they'll stop being metaphysics and become physics. And that's what's great about being human, our ability to really understand how to manipulate the physical plane.
Yeah. Oh, no. I totally agree. I was having a conversation earlier today about how 5 years ago, I was where we were saying 5 years ago, I didn't even have a book or a website or anything. And now I couldn't tell you where I'll be in 5 years time from now. I mean, it's that my life has changed so much and yours is the same, right? It's crazy how things change. But getting back to the book, you also have these danger zones when when things are not so rosy. And I notice in the author community, and you know, just being honest about myself, I get frustrated at not achieving more faster, you know. I do feel sometimes a jealousy, which I try and reframe as aspiration, but I'm pretty sure that some days one would call it jealousy, and I call it comparisonitis, you know, when you look at uber famous authors and go, why can't I be like that, why can't my book sell bazillions of copies? So how can we identify and combat these kind of danger zones?
Well, I think it's important to recognise why we end up in them in the first place. The first is that when we're in a doing zone, like a creative zone or an entrepreneurial zone, when it goes wrong, we slip into a danger zone, right? And we start to blame people and start to self-doubt comes to the surface and this sort of stuff. So, and typically we'd end up in the anger zone, if you like, because we're angry at something, or we might live in the fear zone or the sad zone, or let's say an external event, there's a bereavement in the family or something like that. So we end up in these zones from time to time. I think the first thing to recognise is they are temporary, but they're places we learn. And we learn, when we learn how to get out of them, our propensity to fall in them reduces, if you know what I mean. And our ability to help other people also reduces. So the reason I'm so good at getting rid of fears and procrastination in writers is I've had them all. So I've experienced every single one of them in my life. You know, I've had that essay marked badly. I've stood up and been ridiculed on a stage when I was a child in the nativity play and all this sort of stuff. So I've been there and I've got the t-shirt, and that gives you then the ability to write about it, write about your experiences, and then help other people, which is great. So there, you can take the negative and then turn it into a positive. So I've been working with a guy recently on a book who was an addict. And he's written about his experiences with addiction, with drugs, and many other things. And now he's one of the best counsellors around. You know what I mean? So we end up in these danger zones from time to time. But they're places to learn, and then we can slide from them through a process of healing. So I describe a healing zone into the zones where this real magic happens, and you end up with amazing things happening in your life. And I think that the book is a kind of a model for a typical life journey, you know. Right. So especially now our longevity, we can live into our 70s, 80s and 90s. A lot of people go through this sort of busy thing in their 20s and 30s, then we have the midlife crisis classically, and then we come out from the other side and we emerge as a butterfly from the chrysalis, if you like, and we start flying and selling 75,000 books and this sort of stuff
a day.
even better.
But I see it more, I can see that over a lifetime would be one thing, but I also see this almost as small cyclical processes, you know, as even per book. You have the, you know, all of the, pretty much all the zones you talk about in the book, I think, I probably go through that circle several times a year.
Yeah. And the trick is to make the circle an upward spiral, not a downward spiral. So where people go wrong is when you end up in the danger zone and then you get into another danger zone, another danger. And so you might end up in the guilt zone and be guilty about your addiction and then angry at the system because you've got an addiction and no one's helping you. And that's where the zones, they can pile up on you and you end up in a mega danger zone. But as long as you keep spiraling upwards and you keep learning something, the next time a danger zone is encountered, you can actually be thankful for them. So if I get resistance nowadays, I think of two things. Either it's not a good time to do something, and this is just a way of me realizing don't push so fast ahead. Or it's something I need to learn that I haven't embraced yet. So you can thank a danger zone for coming along so you can learn from it.
Yeah, and also I think there's almost a natural, it's recognising what is a natural endpoint. So I finished my novella One Day in Budapest, and then I went away to India, and I was so grateful to get away because I really felt burnt out. And I think if I'd have been around, if I'd have been here at my desk, I would be frustrated and angry and all of those negative things, but just because I needed a rest. Mm-hmm. And sometimes we just have to recognise that there are cycles of that creative process, and that can actually help you get out of that downward spiral.
Yeah, and if you look at those times, and if you now back time all the times you've been creative and all the times you've struggled, I would I make a bet that there's a seasonality to it.
And then when I don't think I know enough. I don't think I've been doing this long enough to tell yet about seasonality. But it's interesting because, you know, some authors write 4 or 5 books a year. Nora Roberts writes one a month. You know, it's kind of, people have different levels of what they can output.
She will have a strategy and a plan to do that. Yes. And she'll follow what works for her. And it might be, you know, she always writes in the garden, or she has a cup of tea first and a digestive biscuit at the end. But they'll have a pattern to them. It doesn't matter what works, as long as we all find something that works for us. So I'm not saying that everyone should write books in spring.
No.
And everyone should market them in autumn, because that would be awful. But I think that we will all find our natural cycles. I know I'm a morning person. I work with people that love working in the afternoon and some people that work in the evening and this sort of stuff. So when we find our the thing that works for us, whether it's a temporal thing or some other kind of creative pattern, even if it's a bit of some bit of luck that people do or something strange that they do. Some people I know write in their pajamas and this sort of stuff, and then they get out of their pajamas and then change into work clothes and then do work. And that's fine, as long as it works for you.
Mm. No, absolutely. And then I guess that the last bit of the book is about healing and kindness and love and being happy. And that, as you say, is kind of the end state. But I think I certainly think that kindness towards the self is probably something that authors need to do more. We bash ourselves so much, especially with the kind of hyper awareness there is now with, as I say, with the successful people and how hard people are working and how much marketing you're meant to be doing. And I've been feeling this myself, that we need to be a bit kinder to ourselves. So what are the other big sort of lessons in that chapter of the book?
Well, in that section, the main thing is that I'm iterating towards the last chapter, which is the magic zone, where you don't have to work as hard. So, for example, pretty much all my books, a publishing solution has arrived for me at the very week that I finished the last chapter, as opposed to me finishing a book and then saying, where am I going to publish it? And that includes traditionally publishing 3 books and then publishing other books under my own steam. And when you live in that kind of magical world, you can get more done because you're wasting less time doing stuff, if you know what I mean. And so, this idea of kindness, living in the kind zone, is I don't know what sort of world you want to live in, but I want to live in a kind world. I want to live in a loving world. And that's not a sort of trite, let's do a big group hug.
No, let's.
let's do that as well. Yeah, big hug down over Skype to you. But it's also about being, as you say, it's about being kind to yourself and giving yourself a break. And all love starts with self-love. How can you expect someone to love you if you don't love yourself? So it's really important that we recognise that we need a break. We are kind to ourselves. We give ourselves holidays if we can afford them. We give ourselves breaks. And we cut ourselves a little slack. And, if you are a writer and you want to write a book, well, write a small book to start with. That's all I did. I wrote a few to start, write something small, take some baby steps, share them freely or make it 99 pence or 99 cents to start with and take some baby steps. And don't try and write War and Peace from the get-go and think that the first book you're going to write is going to sell a million copies. Just taking baby steps, undertaking baby steps is really important. And to me, it's all about living a more, less frenetic life, but a more creative and productive life and less wasted energy. And the only way you can do that is to do it at one person at a time, you know.
Definitely. And really, I've been thinking a lot about this and trying to ascertain really what I want in my life, as opposed to just saying yes to everything. And it's funny you say about things becoming easier. Things become easier in this publishing and marketing space and less so in the writing space, to be honest, as you constantly challenge yourself with the writing. But to me, to publish a book now, I know the process. There is absolutely no issue with me knowing exactly who to send the book to, like you talked about before, the formatter and the cover design, blah, 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 and the marketing. It's all got a lot easier. And that's like you say about magic. And I know you have serendipity in there. And I really believe that too. You know, things happen, you attract them or whatever. And it's very interesting how that changes over time. And so is that kind of the final sort of thing in the book? That's the aim, is to get to that point.
I guess so. But also I had a kind of other aim for the book is that when we're very rarely just in one zone and that we most of the time you're actually in more than one zone. So you might be in the time zone, the entrepreneurial zone, and in the kindness zone or something like that. And so I came up with this concept that each zone is a hexagon, and a hexagon can be put together like a honeycomb in a beehive. And so I had that idea from pretty much from driving along one day, not thinking about something. The idea popped in, do hexagons. And when I got to the end of the book, I thought that being in the magic zone was the natural conclusion to the book. But I find out that the super zones, creating multiple zones, was the real point of the book. Mm. And I didn't plan this, but I started to use it as a therapeutic tool.
Mm.
So what I've had done, I do these sessions over Skype, and there's one just behind me, a super zone just behind me, and there's a few on my blog. I've created an abundance super zone and a lucky super zone and this sort of stuff. And they work. They are like magic. And when you combine the zones together in a kind of semi-intelligent way, we can start to bring the cumulative effect of all the zones into our life, so we can design a new life by combining bits of the zones together. And already, without me doing anything, several people have approached me saying, oh, I like, you know, that addiction zone. Could I write a spin-off book based on addiction? Because I know lots about addiction. I don't know a lot about addiction. And so I say, yeah, of course you can. Yeah. And so it's kind of acted as a seed for other people to say, well, actually, I know a lot about that thing. So could I do stuff? So I kind of knew that when I first started writing it, but I didn't expect it would happen so quickly.
No, that's great.
Yeah, and so the main thing to me is that the book is a catalyst. And it's a catalyst for me as much as it is for the readers. I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm just trusting that it's a fun and a book with nice intent. You know what I mean? There's nothing to be gained from it other than a change in lifestyle and philosophy and thinking.
Mm, and I think that it's about knowing yourself and looking at yourself and recognizing the state or the zone that you're in, and then the state or the zone that you want to get into.
That's
so you can
it,
say,
yeah,
I'm in this now, but I want to be in that. So, yes. You know, how do I transition between the states?
Yes, and let's say you wanted to be in a successful selling 75,000 books a day zone, right? What we do is, I haven't written a chapter about that, but I could easily take... But no, what we can do is, we can take several of the zones together and create a Joanna personal zone, super zone, that would allow you to do that.
Well, I'd like to do that. I think we also need a freedom zone.
Oh, we can. Yeah, yeah,
we can just. There's so many things you can do with it, which is great. I think there's a lot of scope here for your zone. So, where can people find you and the book and your courses online?
Well, I'm easy. It's Tom Evans. My name .co is the website, not .com or .co.uk. I hang out under the moniker of the Bookwright, not the Playwright, on Twitter and Facebook. So if you go to the website, you'll find not only where the courses are and where to get the books, but also the Zone Show is out there now. So I do a weekly radio podcast, and I do an online video channel as well, interviewing people about who've been in the various zones. So it's almost creating a small industry just within about 9 months, which is amazing.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Tom. That was great.
Fantastic. Lovely to see you again. Take care.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.